You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
A very, very happy new year to all of you Let's Talk Macro listeners, to the new and to the ones who've been with us from the very beginning. Welcome back to the podcast series on macroeconomics brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. And, you know, it is really the gift that keeps on giving, because change is the only constant when it comes to macroeconomics. Ahalya here keeping you company with, of course, Srijit Balasubramanian, economist in the fixed income fund management team. Welcome, Srijit. How are you? I hope 2025 has been treating you well so far.
I'm good, Ahalya. How are you doing? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. So yeah, has your year gotten off to a good start because of all of the macroeconomic action?
Yeah. A lot of action, right, you know, quite early in the year. So keeping us on our toes.
Yeah, I mean, it's only been a couple of weeks into 2025 and there's already so much to talk about. So on today's episode, we're going to be discussing the recent data and market moves. We're also going to be looking at the immediate significant economic events that lie ahead for us. What we do see is still robust US data beating market expectations. So a dial down also of the outlook for rate cuts by the Fed and even in emerging markets. The two key immediate events that lie ahead are President-elect Donald Trump assuming office on the 20th of this month, and for India, the union budget on the 1st of February. So we're going to discuss all of this in detail. Srijit, just halfway through January, markets across the world, whether it's the US or the UK, have already witnessed quite a bit of action. So why don't we start there? Can you take us through what has happened since we last spoke?
Sure. So most recently, US data, particularly there in the labor market, was much stronger than expected. So the December non-farm payroll addition was around 256,000 versus an expectation of around 160,000. So higher by, you know, almost by 100,000. Unemployment inched down and wage growth momentum was flat. And the latest 2 months of job openings data had also moved up, and initial jobless claims for unemployment insurance was lower. Now, some of these job additions could get subsequently revised down, but these, you know, are still quite high numbers. And all this has happened on top of one already slowing progress on disinflation, which we see in the inflation data and even the, for example, the prices component in the recent ISM services print. And to the expectation of Trump's policies, based on whatever we know so far, to be, you know, net inflationary and adding to the fiscal deficit. The Fed, although it cut by 25 basis points last month, lowered 2025 rate cut expectations by half to, you know, just around 50 basis points, as it believes policy is now significantly less restrictive and that can follow a more cautious and gradual approach. The market, in fact, sees only a single 25 basis points cut this year now. So the US exceptionalism story has been, you know, getting stronger and stronger. The rate cut expectations have fallen. US Treasury yields have risen further and the US dollar has gotten even stronger. This has, you know, really important implications for the rest of the advanced world and for emerging markets as well.
Yeah, I mean, US exceptionalism all the way there. But given that you just spoke about the rest of the advanced world and the emerging markets, how is this combination of the domestic situation there and the impact of higher US yields and the stronger US dollar kind of playing out?
So growth is not this strong in other advanced economies. So, for example, we've often discussed how growth in Europe has been much weaker, given the slowdown in Germany and rising political tensions in some countries. The ECB, the European Central Bank, also recently lowered its 2025 growth forecast and flagged the likelihood of the 2% inflation target being achieved earlier. So market expectation of rate cuts by the ECB this year is, you know, higher than that of the Fed. Other central banks, like in Sweden, has already cut by 150 basis points since, I think, May. And Switzerland, for example, has also cut rates aggressively. The Bank of England, on the other hand, has cut only 50 basis points so far, as inflationary pressures, particularly from services, you know, remain high. So although growth has weakened there, it believes policy restraint has to be reduced only gradually. In fact, the bigger issue in the UK now is on the fiscal side, where markets are skeptical of the government's latest budget plan to balance revenue expenditure and tax revenues in about 5 years from now. The recent sharp rise in yields witnessed, they can, you know, raise interest costs and thus threaten this plan, where the leeway is already quite small. To make matters worse, the pound has been falling despite bond yields rising. which is actually reflecting the investor concerns there. So stronger data and re-anchoring of rate expectation in the US adds to this problem. That's in the UK, the only major advanced economy with a very different economic and monetary policy situation now is Japan, which is looking for a reinforcing cycle between wages and prices to raise interest rates. CPI inflation there is just under 3%, and recent wage growth data has been quite encouraging. But industrial production growth, if you see, has been weak, and retail trade growth has been moderating. Nevertheless, the market currently expects about 225 basis points hikes by the Bank of Japan this year. So that's broadly where advanced economies are. Higher rates in the US increasing the divergence with domestic policy rates, and stronger US dollar not helping exchange rates. Down the line, some of this weaker growth elsewhere should start feeding into the US monetary policy decision making as well.
Right, weaker growth, and then add to that the impact from higher US interest rates and the strong US dollar. I guess that's the key point to keep an eye on. Yeah. So what does this continued strength in the US economy imply for emerging markets, Srijit? I mean, are they facing the same challenges, if not bigger?
Essentially, higher US rates and dollar tightens financial conditions for emerging markets. You know, by ceteris paribus, increasing this spread between interest rates, impacting capital flows, exchange rate, foreign currency, debt servicing, and so on. Of course, it depends on each country's extent of linkage on trade and capital flows. In today's context, as some of the EMs have started or are embarking on rate cuts, it could reduce the space available to cut and support growth, for example. Within EMs, we know China is facing structural challenges with the property sector and consumer demand being weak there. CPI inflation is very low, and producer price index growth, for instance, is negative. Monetary policy has already been eased in terms of rates and reserve requirements. Fiscal response is what is needed, and that is what is being used. And we've, in fact, seen measures to support the stock market and the property sector also. And mainly local government special bond quota is being used to swap hidden debt over a period of time. So the acknowledgement of the consumer demand problem and the intent to do more was also there. Again, higher US rates increase the rate divergence, it impacts flows, and a strong US dollar adds to the challenges for the Chinese yuan, which has already taken quite some beating. And this is with tariff measures, yet to be announced by the US, should be sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've been tracking the China story for a while on most of our podcasts over the past couple of months, at least, and they are facing a very challenging time. So it's just going to be par for course to see how that situation plays out. Next up, India, Srijit, how's the situation looking for us here?
Yeah, so India's structural positives like the fiscal path, current account dynamics, given higher services, trade surplus, and so on, those remain intact. It is that cyclically we are now slowing. So FY25 real GDP growth is now officially estimated at 6.4%, and this is after about 8.2% in FY24. We've seen that credit growth is slowed, again, partly due to RBI's macro-prudential measures. Corporate earnings growth is eased. Corporate tax collections have therefore been weak. And government capital expenditure is lagging. A meaningful and broad private investment cycle has also not yet taken shape. Banking system liquidity, importantly, continues to be very tight despite the CRR cut by RBI, given RBI's FX intervention over the last few months. And of course, the natural leakage from liquidity through higher currency in circulation. Although RBI's FX intervention seems to have eased, if you look at the numbers, liquidity will still fall further if not for RBI intervention, to provide permanent liquidity, that is. So what the RBI does on liquidity and what guidance it gives will now actually be more important. It could be more patient with the rate cuts given, higher US rates, stronger US dollar, the recent move up in crude oil prices, due to US sanctions on Russia and lower inventory there. And when liquidity is better to effectively transmit a rate cut. But that said, India is relatively better insulated from higher US yields and a stronger dollar, compared to some of the other EMs. But policy, again, is not completely independent or insulated.
Yeah, I mean, better, but still some limitations there for India on policy. Maybe that'll change based on, the key event, 1st February. the union budget. Yeah. Now, as you said, RBI is providing the permanent banking system liquidity, and that'll probably take precedence now. But why don't we pivot the conversation to those two key events that we talked about right at the beginning, Srijith? One, Donald Trump assuming office on the 20th, and then India's union budget on the 1st of February. What are your expectations from these events? And I'm sure we'll talk about them in more detail in the podcast to come.
Yeah, so we know the broad areas of likely policy announcements by Trump, if you take that first, going by what he said, and in fact, what his team has also been speaking about. This includes tariffs, tax cuts, border control and immigration, and government efficiency and savings. We've also heard a bit on deregulation as well. What we actually don't know is when, by how much, and at what pace these measures are going to be implemented. So what we look at is his initial measures, clarity on his sort of priority list, his approach in general to tariffs. So whether it is used more as a negotiation tool, what countries, products and tariff rates are we talking about, whether it's implemented right away or is it sometime later, whether it gets implemented one shot or in phases, and what's his approach towards China specifically, whether he picks up from where he left last time or it's going to be a different approach this time. The other thing we look at, and we've discussed this before, are offsets to the Trump trade narrative in general, which is entirely sort of unidirectional right now, towards higher US rates and stronger US dollar. Given the recent slower progress in disinflation, the likely K-shaped economy within the lower income segment are not doing quite well as the higher income segment there, the level of rates being still quite high, global growth being weaker like we discussed, and of course the Treasury's interest expense rising even further from higher rates. So we have to see where there are balances and what these balances are to the sort of the current Trump trade narrative, which is again quite unidirectional at the moment.
Right. So clarity on approach, specific measures and balances to the so-called Trump trade narrative, which is currently all about higher interest rates in the US and a stronger dollar. Now, on India's union budget, the second key event, what are your expectations there?
So we'll definitely look at the fiscal glide path to begin with, whether we are at 4.9% of GDP fiscal deficit this financial year, as was the initial estimate. Particularly given the lower capital expenditure of late. So are we at that number this year, and what the FY26 estimate is now, likely at 4.4%, but we'll have to see what the revenue and expenditure growth assumptions are, particularly given nominal growth has, as we've seen in the data, started to slow cyclically. Of course, we'll also look at the government securities and T-bill borrowing numbers. And also if we are moving to a framework targeting reduction in debt to GDP from FY27. So any detailed on the envisaged annual reduction will be useful, sort of. So what the framework is going to be, by what number is the debt to GDP number going to get reduced? That sort of information is going to be really useful. There could also be some import tariff rationalization. And also given growth has slowed cyclically, household income and savings growth have moderated, and leverage is high. We've discussed this before. There could be measures to support this, but again, with the headline fiscal glide paths not being disturbed. So that's sort of a broad view and what we look for in the budget.
Okay, well, like I said, once the budget is announced, we will be here to talk about the macroeconomic impacts of that and, at least how it features, in the macroeconomic landscape. That brings us to the end, just like that. Thank you so much, Srijith, for joining us, as always, on today's show and really helping us unpack everything.
My pleasure, Alia.
All right. And before we sign off, a few key takeaways to help all of you stay on track. First is that it has been U.S. exceptionalism and Trump trade all the way so far. U.S. data continues to beat expectations. Trump's policies are expected to be inflationary and adding to the fiscal deficit. The Fed is taking a gradual and careful approach to rate cuts, and the market has cut short its expectations too. The net result of all of this is that higher U.S. yields and even stronger U.S. dollar are at play. And this has important implications for the rest of the world and its macroeconomics. For other advanced economies, growth is weaker and expectation of rate cuts is higher. US exceptionalism increases the yield spreads and hits their currencies. The impact on emerging markets depends on the extent of linkage on trade and capital flows, but in the current context, it could reduce the space available to cut rates and support growth in some emerging markets. For India, growth is cyclically slowing, but given banking system liquidity remains very tight, RBI measures and guidance to infuse permanent liquidity is more important. The RBI could be patient with rate cuts given the US situation, recent move up in oil prices, and for higher liquidity for effective transmission. That said, India is relatively better insulated among the emerging markets from higher US yields and a strong dollar. And finally, with Trump assuming office as the President of the United States later this month, we will look for clarity on the approach, initial measures and balancers to the current Trump trade narrative. On India's union budget, the fiscal deficit and borrowing numbers till FY26, the fiscal framework thereafter and measures to support households and the current cyclical growth slowdown will be the key areas to look out for. And we'll bring you all of that information in the coming months. Thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. Until the next time, keep your eye out for everything macroeconomics with the help of our podcast.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.